Les colloques du Collège de France.
So the last speaker is Rafael Rodriguez from Institut Curie, chemical control of cell adaptation in cancer and immunity.
Right. Thank you also very much, Hugues. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's a bit overwhelming to be speaking after such a distinguished lineup of speakers. And it's good to speak in Paris. So what our lab has been focusing on for almost a decade now is how cells do adapt, in particular cancer cells and immune cells. And I would say that cell adaptation is the reason why we live, and it is also the reason why tumors are progressing. And so understanding the chemistry of cell adaptation will provide the means to develop new compounds rationally to be able to control this adaptation. And so before I start, I need to give credit to the people who did the work, in particular Sebastian here in the audience and Tatiana, who have been putting up with me for 15 years now, so 20 years, Sebastian, in spite of myself. So credit goes to you, all our collaborators and funding agencies, of course. I've been trying to put what we're doing in the context of the history of science, and this is how the story will unfold to me, so I apologize if some names are missing, but those are the people who have been very influential to the work we are doing today. So Biddle, discovery of genes, 1941, followed by Linus Pauling, discovery of the first mutation that is causing a disease. And Pauling back then came up with the idea that if you correct a molecular defect, then you correct the disease. And this is, of course, very important, but it also conveys the idea that all diseases are genetics. So several things. Liu, 70 years later, with CRISPR, correct the defect and prove that the hypothesis of Pauling was correct. Of course, that might be a bit trivial to us today because we know what a gene is, but this was published 4 years before the publication of the double helical DNA structure, and so the concept of a gene back then was very different from what it is today. Now, other seminal work, 1962, John Gordon, the first person showing that cell differentiate independently of gene restriction. So you don't need to take out genes from the genome to have a change in cell identity, which was, for me, the game-changing paper. If you ask me what is your favorite paper in science, that's the one. And I was fortunate enough to meet John Gordon at the Gordon Institute, which is where I train as a cell biologist. Now, of course, this work, that's a beautiful paper also because he's alone on the paper. He wrote the paper in French and in English, and I think there are 700 nuclear transplants to show that, you know, an embryo can develop from the nucleus of a differentiated cell. Now, this works only with key transcription factors, so it took another 40 years for the identification of transcription factors, and of course, we now know that transcription is taking place only when the chromatin landscape is poised for transcription to take place. So if your genes are, of course, loaded with a repressive mark, the genes are repressed, and if the genes are loaded with permissive marks, then your genes will be expressed. And of course, David Ellis and Schreiber discovered the HAT and HDAX on the same year. Now, I am standing here today to tell you that metal ions, in particular iron and copper, are just as important as transcription factors and just as important as HAT and HDAX. That might be surprising for many because metals are being coined as trace elements or they are being coined as a cofactor of enzymes. This is true for many metals, potassium, calcium, magnesium, but it is not true for iron and copper. And the reason why it is not true is because those are metal catalysts catalyzing or accelerating chemical reactions. So if you want to know the difference between calcium and iron, calcium does not exchange electrons in the cell. Iron and copper are. So as soon as you see electron shuttling, it means a chemical reaction is taking place, and those metals are acting as a catalyst and not as cofactors. Means that if you remove the catalyst, the chemistry is not happening. Now, why is it taking so long to understand metal biology? Because you cannot knock out a metal. And you can hardly knock down a metal because if you take out one of the key players regulating iron homeostasis, everything changes, making it very difficult to study. Also because metals exist as bound species, they do exist as a free species, they do exist as many different types of redox states like iron 2, iron 3. And this is where the chemistry comes in. You need to develop specific probes and compounds to be able to track the metals inside of the cell, to know exactly where they are, what degree of oxidation they are in, and what is the chemistry they are catalyzing, which is extremely tedious. But you know, some people have been doing a lot of work on that, and we're just catching up slowly. So that cartoon sums up everything we've done in the lab. The key papers from my lab are listed here. And that's how the story unfolded to us. We have become interested in CD44, which is a plasma membrane protein that turns out to be doing two things. First, it is taken up by means of endocytosis. And what is known about it is that it is the main receptor of hyaluronic acid. This was established by other people. What was also established is that you see CD44 in development, for example, during erythropoiesis. Maturation of red blood cells transiently express CD44. CD44 is also coined as an immune cell activation marker, for example, when you activate your macrophages to become inflammatory, or T cells, or dendritic cells, you will see upregulation of CD44. And in cancer, CD44 marks cancer relapse. It marks cancer metastasis, it marks drug-tolerant or therapy-resistant cancer cells. You will find CD44 to be expressed in residual tumors, and you will find CD44 to be overexpressed in the metastatic population of the primary tumor, in almost all cancer tissues. What was not known, though, is that hyaluronic acid, which can be up to 1 megadalton in humans, is negatively charged throughout, meaning that each polymer can contain about 4,000 negative charges. And so if this complex is being taken up, a very simple basic question is, what are the counter ions that are bound to the metal for it to be neutral to avoid splitting charges? And so what we discovered in the lab is that hyaluronate hijacks iron and copper, mostly with calcium. This is work of Sebastian Müller. That is bound to CD44, and when CD44 is taken up by endocytosis, those metals are being internalized as well. We discovered two things: a new chemical reaction that is catalyzed by copper 2 in mitochondria, not copper 1 species in the ATC, but a copper 2 species. Copper 2 activates hydrogen peroxide to maintain the pool of NAD+. NAD+ is a co-substrate of many enzymes of the Krebs cycle, important for the production of key metabolites such as ketoglutarate acetyl-CoA. Those two traffic in the nucleus, and those two will regulate the methylation status and acetylation status of histones. So in fact, it is copper 2 in mitochondria that remotely control the epigenetic landscape and how cells would adapt. Second, we know that iron is transiently upregulated in the lysosome, and I will show you some data. And the aim, of course, is to have iron traffic in the cell nucleus such that iron-dependent demethylase can remove methyl at histone marks, which would unlock the expression of genes. What was shown before by Danny Feinberg in particular is that the repressive histone mark H3K9-dimethyl prevail in cancer metastasis. What was not known, though, is that iron is limiting. So when demethylase are upregulated, the metal has to be upregulated as well in terms of endocytosis, otherwise those enzymes are not functional. And so if iron is transiently present in the lysosome and if copper is transiently present here in the mitochondria, the idea for us is to develop compounds that can specifically modulate the chemistry to be able to control plasticity or to promote or inactivate iron to regulate the extent to which iron would promote oxidation of lipids. Now, key data. So I did cherry pick data from our publication that I like, some of which are not published. So it's up to you to take what you like and to just discard the rest. This experiment was done by Sebastian Müller in the lab. It took us several years to establish. We used this cell line that was co-developed by Alain Pizieux in Lyon and Bob Weinberg in Boston, the HMLR-CD44, which is known to be a cancer stem cell or cancer cell susceptible to initiate tumors. They have this metastatic profile. They are refractory to standard of care like Taxol. We knocked out CD44 or transferrin receptor. We used three different dyes, RONOX-M, which specifically stains lysosomal iron 2, hyaluronate that was tagged, transferrin which is tagged, and what we found is that there are actually two iron endocytosis pathways that are mutually exclusive, one that is positive for hyaluronate, one that's positive for transferrin receptor, and good job, they are mutually exclusive because this allowed us to discover that CD44 promote iron endocytosis. If they were to be mixed, we wouldn't be able to tell. Now, if you knock out CD44, that population goes down. If you take out a transferrin receptor, that population goes down, that one goes up. Of course, CD44 is fluid phase endocytosis, so even though if you load your cells that are CD44 knocked out with hyaluronate, some of it still goes in. These are synthetic markers of this. So what we looked at is endogenous marker of iron uptake. So we can feed the wild type or the knockout cells with hyaluronate. And you will see that in the wild type, there is an increase of ferritin, which marks upregulation of iron uptake, because ferritin is the iron storage protein. This upregulation does not occur in the knockout, and it is even more visible in the transferrin receptor knockout, just because CD44 and transferrin receptor compensate one another. Now, we know that during this epithelial mesenchymal transition, or iron cell plasticity in cancer, there is an upregulation of CD44. There is more iron in the mesenchymal population, which is why those cells are vulnerable to ferroptosis. Ferroptosis induction. What we didn't know was, why do mesenchymal cells need more iron? So we did a quantitative proteomic experiment. We found that key iron-dependent demethylase such as PHF8 are upregulated. There are a few others, of course. So here, this is a catalytic cycle of iron demethylation. You would see that iron is the catalyst and that the enzyme becomes the ligand. That's why I'm saying it's not a cofactor. If you remove iron from this catalytic site, there is no chemistry. And so what I'm telling you is that we can take methylated lysine residue in a flask, add molecular oxygen, ketoglutarate, a bit of iron, and methylation, demethylation will take place. In the absence of enzyme. What the enzyme confers is genome site specificity and the catalytic turnover. It goes faster and it is specific to specific genes because of the enzyme. This is it. I like this data a lot, and I will explain why. So you can induce EMT in this triple-negative breast cancer, the 468, using EGF. You see upregulation of CD44. Upregulation of PHF8, you see demethylation of the repressive mark H3K9-dimethyl, and now when you knock down CD44, demethylation is not taking place. So why do I like this data so much? Because it shows that if you take out a protein that is localized at the plasma membrane of the cell, there is a direct chemical consequence on the post-translational status of this histone mark inside of the nucleus, which shows that this trafficking goes from the membrane to the expression of the gene. So H3K9 is a repressive mark, of course, so because it is spread throughout the gene body, the genes are not expressed, so if you take it out, you unlock the expression of key genes associated to the mark. Now I am telling you that iron is a master regulator of cell plasticity. You might find this a bit strong. So I'm showing you another unpublished data here, whereby we look at EMT using EGF, and then you can remove EGF such that your cells recapitulate this epithelial state. And that is an RNA-seq experiment. We can compare the three stages, the basal state, the mesenchymal state, and the epithelial return state. And you will see that there are no less than 85 iron-dependent demethylases that are regulating epithelial mesenchymal transition in breast. Some are upregulated at the basal level. They disappear when you induce your EMT. Some new ones get upregulated, including PHF8. And surprisingly, when you recapitulate this epithelial state, it is a third pool of enzymes that is upregulated, meaning that the scheme initially presented by Bob and Angela is mostly correct, save for the bimodal scheme, whereby this looks like a cell cycle as opposed to just a bimodal, whereby the return scheme is the same. Anyway, all these enzymes rely on iron. If you remove iron, there is no epigenetic reprogramming. There is no cell state transition. So iron is a master regulator of cell adaptation. Now, we did a ChIP-seq experiment on this repressive mark, of course, correlated to an RNA-seq experiment. So if you lose a repressive mark, you would expect re-expression of your genes, which we have done here. So all those genes are genes that are knocked or turned down at the epithelial state. You induce your EMT, CD44 goes up, iron goes in, the mark is gone, genes are expressed again. Now I label some of them that we like. Fibronectin, why? Because it is, of course, a key known mesenchymal marker. CD44, interestingly, CD44 regulates its own expression at the transcriptional level, which is very interesting because normally transferrin receptor is repressed at the translational level through an iron responsive element in the UTR. The more iron you have, the less expression you have of transferrin receptor, which allows the basal state to repress iron uptake to avoid oxidative stress. And so the question we asked was, how is it possible that mesenchymal cells override this process? We now know how it works. CD44 does the opposite at the transcriptional level. Also, hyaluronate synthase, this is for you, Fatima. So those cells are producing their own hyaluronate to hijack the metal from the outside, which is very interesting. Now, I just label those because those are genes involved in development, immune cell activation, EMT, cancer progression, wound healing, all biological processes CD44 has been associated to in the past. So we now know what the function of CD44 is. Now, to illustrate my point, we use deferoxamine to hijack the metal from the enzyme, so you can induce your EMT, you lose the mark, you use deferoxamine, and you longer demethylate, which shows that if you have an iron chelator, basically, you can just inactivate your enzyme, but you will inactivate all these demethylases. And those genes that you will see here are partly repressed using deferoxamine as well. Now you could challenge us and say this is a dish experiment, and Marcus would say that. How is it relevant to human physiology and to cancer research? So we did a lot of work with Christophe Ginessier and Emmanuel Charaf. We selected several tumors that are known for their EMT profile, cancer relapse, drug tolerance. So I'm showing you just one example of those. We took one tumor, which is not a naive tumor. We sorted the cells, CD44 high-low. You see that fibronectin is upregulated in CD44 high, which is coherent with the fact that fibronectin here is a mesenchymal marker. Transferrin is down. Why is it down? Because you have a lot of iron, so you repress transferrin receptor expression. That's textbook. What is not textbook, though, is ferritin is up. So how is it that ferritin is up, iron is up, and transferrin receptor is down? Why? Because it is CD44 that promotes metal uptake in cancer. It's not transferrin receptor. Now PHF8 is up, the mark is down, and that scheme shows that this mark controls the expression of this and this. So all of this is coherent. Now we've become interested in other cancer, in particular pancreatic cancer. Why? Because we know that CD44 is upregulated in many cancers that are difficult to treat, especially pancreatic cancer. So we look at a primary tumor. We collect the cells, CD44 high, CD44 low. We looked at the iron content. You would see that in healthy tissues, there is a lower amount of iron. We use a probe that stains for lysosomal iron too. So you would see that the CD44 high contains more lysosomal iron too that is chemically reactive. So if it is chemically reactive, if it can oxidize or reduce sodium or like, it's likely to react with hydrogen peroxide and to promote lipid peroxidation inside the lysosomal compartment. And again, you will see this, of course, being up in the CD44 high population. Now, here's the thing. You want to identify biologically active compound. There are two ways. You can either do a screen, and this would have been my natural take. And why? Because that's what I've seen being done in the past. Stuart Schreiber in particular. Or you can challenge the system and say, I'm going to start from scratch, come up with a rational design of a compound, take a piece of paper, draw a structure, and hope for the best. And so if you think of chemistry as being the science of molecule, and to my taste, making molecules, the capacity of synthesizing a compound from scratch, then you might see chemical biology as a different discipline, is not making the compound as much as it is knowing which compound to make. And so if you do the job well, then you end up with a compound that is doing what you want it to do. So we came up with this idea that we could invent a lipid degrader, a compound that would be a bifunctional compound with a part that could bind to lipid membrane and another part that we use in chemistry to promote oxidation of difficult to oxidize substrate. Knowing that that compound is not internalized in the cell because it's positively charged, but this one being bound as a plasma membrane could be taken up by endocytosis. And so if you tether the two, then it's likely that this part will go inside of the lysosomal compartment where iron is upregulated transiently, form a complex with iron 2 that is chemically reactive at pH 5, and by doing so, you could promote by proximity oxidation of lipids. Now we choose this natural product, bramycin, which Tatiana had synthesized in the past because it's fluorescent, and we knew it was accumulating in the lysosomal compartment. So it's not a lysomotropic compound. It's a compound that goes to the lysosome through endocytosis, not diffusion through membrane. So here at 37 degrees, endocytosis is working well. So we term this compound phentomycin after the British chemist Henry Fenton, who discovered this Fenton chemistry back in 1894. So phentomycin here colocalized with lysotracker, which is a lysomal marker. The parent compound here, just maramycin in the red part, also does the same. And this is just our control experiment. So we know that this complex is going inside the lysomal compartment. And so this is the concept of the lipid degrader. Phentomycin will be here. The two moieties are here, one that binds to lipid membrane. That is outside of the cell. After endocytosis, it is inside the lumen. It would bind to iron 2. Which would chemically react with hydrogen peroxide, form an iron oxo species that literally mimics radicals such as the hydroxyl radicals, hydroperoxyl radical. This is susceptible to hijack a proton from, not a proton, a hydrogen atom from a phospholipid, and then you can initiate this cascade of lipid peroxidation. Now, I would point out that Fenton chemistry works with two ions, iron 2 and iron 3. Very often people forget iron 3. People think that iron 3 is chemically inert. It is not. Fenton chemistry is used in the industry as a catalyst with hydrogen peroxide to degrade organic substrate. We don't use an equivalent of iron. We use a catalytic amount of iron. And the principle of a catalyst is that it remains unchanged at the end of the reaction. Why is that so? Because iron 2 gives iron 3, iron 3 gives iron 2. And those two can react with hydrogen peroxide to form two types of radicals, hydroxy and hydroperoxy radicals, both of which have somewhat different chemical reactivity, but both susceptible to hijack hydrogen to promote lipid peroxidation. Right, so how is this compound performing inside of cancer tissues? We used primary tumor from biopsy of pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma. Quantitative lipidomic experiments show that this compound induces lipid peroxidation, which is rescued by tocopherol, which is a lipophilic antioxidant. But most importantly, we see that this CD44 high population in the tumor starts to be depleted by the compound, and this is being blocked by Marcus, is a landmark ferroptosis inhibitor, liproxtatin, and tocopherol, the lipophilic antioxidant, and deferoxamine, which is a tight iron chelator. Now, that is a primary tumor. We have done the same, so this data is not published, but I thought it was worth showing in light of the press releases and the media and what was said. We were in the capacity to have access to this PDAC metastasis in the liver, which is very interesting for us because the liver tissues are known to be loaded with iron and copper, and so we can tell that the PDAC tissues in the liver are more rich in iron than liver tissues. We know that there is more chemically reactive iron 2 in the lysosome of this metastatic population compared to LC tissues. We see more CD44 in the PDAC tissues compared to the liver tissues. We see that phentomycin promotes lipid peroxidation in the PDAC tissues CD44 high because there is more iron catalyst and there is no effect in the LC tissues. And we see that the CD44 high population is being depleted. Now that population here, there is a reason why cancer patients are dying. CD44 is the population that is refractory to treatment, that migrates a lot, that is capable of seeding a new tumor in the lung, in the brain, in the liver, and so forth and so on. And it is the one that remains not intact, but survive standard of care treatment. And so we show here that this lipid degrader has the capacity, of course it is an in vitro experiment, but to deplete a population of cells that standard of care are incapable of targeting at this point in time. Now, working with primary cells, so this is work from Juan Giovanna in Marseille, we compared our compound to the standard of care treatment, which is a combo of several compounds for FOLFIRINOX, so irinotecan, oxaliplatin, 5-fluorouracil. I point out that all the components of the FOLFIRINOX, or gemcitabine and Taxol, are here to target the proliferative capacity of the cell. So if the cell escapes cell division, those compounds are not going to work. And so I understand that the combo is working and this is the best we have at this point in time. But our take is that it's not good enough because if your cells escape cell proliferation, inevitably you will have persister cancer cells. And what we know is that to target iron, you don't need your cells to proliferate. Mesenchymal cells, the propensity to proliferate is reduced compared to the PTLA state. So here we show that in primary cells we have a better response. We also show this in organoids. Interestingly, the standard of care, in fact, never reach full response because cells adapt. And regardless of concentration, we show that phentomycin managed to eradicate completely all the cells in those organoids. Now we try to evaluate how combo therapy would work. Of course, the idea for us is not to remove the use of FOLFIRINOX. It wouldn't make any sense. But it would be to add to this combo therapy a compound that targets the other state that cells are capable of acquiring. So here we specifically selected those cells because we knew that they were refractory to the treatment, bottom line. Our compound by itself here doesn't work very well, but what we found that if you use both together, then it works a lot better. And very interestingly, the combination works even better in the cells that are the most refractory if you use a single treatment by themselves. Other set of experiments, that experiment was done by Christophe Ginessi in Marseille, and this one by Jessaline Belacker at Harvard Med. So here, that's a typical model of persister. So we use the SUM159, which are triple negative breast cancer known to overexpress CD44. The way this experiment was done was to treat the cells with doxorubicin for 2 days, and then you just reseed your cells, and you wait for colony formation. That experiment was done the same way, but in addition to it, you can add phentomycin. And you see that the capacity to see tumors or to grow tumors is being, or tumors to grow colonies is being reduced. So that phentomycin target the other state. This experiment was done, so this is a tumor growth that is an intranodal tumor, which recapitulate not all, but some of the feature of metastasis, knowing that these cells are CD44 high, and yes, they can initiate tumor with a restricted number of inoculated cells. Also, Jessaline and Sean Morrison have shown that the lymphatic is a nice environment for the cells to grow because they do survive ferroptosis because this is a reducing environment. And that's why the propensity of a cell to survive in the lymphatic is higher than in the blood. And here we show that this phentomycin compound reduces tumor growth in this environment, which I point out contains a reduced amount of iron as well. And now we think that there is immune cell repression as well in the lymphatics because the amount of metals is lower than in the blood. And this is what we're trying to work on at this point in time. Now that data is a sarcoma data. They call it fibrosarcoma, but I understand from Sarah Watson that fibrosarcoma do not exist. So she says these are UPS, undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma. So here we've done an experiment. So we are not here to say that our compound is the best compound in the world, and we are certainly not here to say that there will be no drug tolerance to our compound. We are saying that there are different states, and if you want to eradicate the cells in cancer, then you need to use a drug per possible state. That's what we are saying. So here we used a sub-lethal dose of phentomycin to see how would the cells respond to the treatment. And what we see after a couple of days of treatment is most of the ferroptosis proteins are upregulated. Some of lysosomal proteins are upregulated as well, which nicely link lysosome to ferroptosis in an unbiased way at last. But most interestingly for us, we see that epithelial transcription factors are upregulated and mesenchymal transcription factors are downregulated. So it's nice because it would show that a cancer of mesenchymal origin would have the capacity to escape this mesenchymal state to acquire another state that looks like an epithelial state. And we have done this experiment many times over. Now, to experiment, if you take these cells and you treat them with sublethal doses of doxorubicin, you will see that the cells that are mesenchymal become even more so mesenchymal, upregulation of Vimentin and an increase of ferritin, meaning more iron. You see that CD44 is upregulated as well, so the cells adapt. But if you treat with phentomycin, then you would have the other way around. The cells would just lose CD44 and they would repress upregulation of ferritin. And so here we've got two states, a state that is more or less vulnerable to apoptosis, and one that is more or less vulnerable to ferroptosis, and those cells can adapt between state and develop some resistance mechanism, but at the same time acquire new vulnerabilities. And so that's what we need to do at this point in time. I think I've been speaking for a little bit too long, so I wrap this up very quickly, but we have done similar experiments in the context of inflammation. I show you just a couple of data. We've been working on monocytes to produce macrophages in vitro, but out of human blood. So you can produce these inflammatory macrophages. You see upregulation of CD44. That's known, although nobody knew what it was doing. What we now know is that there is an increase of iron in the nucleus and increase of copper 2 in mitochondria. We discovered that reaction I just told you about. I'll pass on all the reprogramming that's all in the paper. Quickly, we develop a new compound that is a metformin dimer with a specific size of linker with a specific geometry. Again, that is a rational design. That compound is a specific copper 2 chelator in mitochondria. It doesn't go anywhere else in the cell. It doesn't bind to any other metals, and it doesn't bind to copper 1. What more to ask for? We can induce sepsis in mice using several models, either LPS or cecal ligation puncture. You can inoculate SARS-CoV-2 by intratracheal administration. You can collect small peritoneal macrophages in those or alveolar macrophages in this one. You see upregulation of CD44. You see increase of copper, which we expect is a copper 2 species in mitochondria. Now, when you co-treat with LCC12, you will see that induction of LPS goes through the acquisition of acetylated mark and depletion of methylated mark, which explain how inflammatory genes are being upregulated. And this is all controlled by mitochondrial copper 2. And now when you inactivate mitochondrial copper 2, you block this. And that's how this compound blocks the acquisition of the inflammatory state. And of course, we show the same effect on those pro-inflammatory genes. Now in vivo, you see rescue of viability in vivo in those models. That's CLP, LPS, and that is the SARS. The most interesting part is that dexamethasone, which is standard of care, shift death but does not rescue viability, whereas this inactivation of mitochondrial copper 2, which is not toxic at all at effective doses, block acquisition of that pro-inflammatory state. And so that shows that if you control cell plasticity of your immune system, you promote health. This is what we say. In pancreatic cancer, what do we have? You can, this is Dave Tubson model, the KPC model. You can induce EMT with TGF-beta, CD44 goes up, mitochondrial copper 2 goes up. Now when you look at your mesenchymal marker, you see upregulation of those, which correlate with the capacity to form metastasis. When you co-treat with LCC12, you partly inactivate the expression of these genes. And so these are our conclusion. CD44 is a protein that has been known for more than half a century, associated to many things. The mechanistic rationale of it, it was documented a lot, but a bit fuzzy for us. What we know is that CD44 promotes acquisition of cell plasticity properties through the uptake of key metals, in particular copper and iron. I mentioned these two only because they are redox active, not the others. We show that copper and iron reprogram the metabolic and the epigenetic landscape in cancer cells and immunity. We show that lysosomal iron 2 and mitochondrial copper 2 are druggable with small molecules. We clearly show that it is a cell state that defines how cells are dying. So you might have an apoptosis-inducing agent. If you target mesenchymal cells, you will struggle to kill your cells, and you can try to induce ferroptosis in the epithelial cells, you will struggle as well. So discussing compounds in terms of that's a pro-ferroptotic compound or that's an apoptosis-inducing agent is a bit weak as an argument. You have to define what is the cell state you are considering. I've been saying this for a long time, and I share this view with Jilali Anand, which is an expert of sepsis, and with Pascal Hamel, which is a pancreatic cancer expert. Cancer metastasis and acute inflammation are similar molecular diseases. Of course, we are not saying that the physiopathology of the disease are the same. We are just saying that if cell plasticity is the reason why people are dying, sepsis, the result of activation of immune cells, and metastasis, which causes 70% of cancer-related deaths, then both processes of cell adaptation are regulated by these metals, CD44, iron and copper, and the compound we've developed are effective in both settings. And so there are similar molecular diseases in the sense of line spalling. And finally, and this is what I prefer and what we've done, controlling cell state or cell adaptation confer therapeutic benefit. So yes, if you correct a genetic mutation like sickle cell anemia or progeria as shown by Pauling and Liu, you correct the disease. And what we have shown that if you control cell plasticity independently of genetic alteration, you can also correct the disease. And with this, I would like to thank you all so very much for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.